was early summer. I don't know much about flowers. Maybe they hadn't been open long. I want to know how fast the Duncans picked up on the pattern. 3 weeks? Two? The guy moved a little. His head stayed where it was, but his hands crept back toward the gun. Reacher said, "Fair warning, I'll shoot you if that muzzle starts turning toward me." The guy stopped moving, but he didn't bring his hands back. Reacher said, "I'm going to assume 2 weeks. They noticed her the first Sunday. They watched for her the second Sunday. They had you in place for the third go-round." No response. Reacher said, "I want you to confirm it for me. I want to know when the Duncans called you. I want to know when they called those boys to build the fence. I want to hear about the plan." No response. Reacher said, "You want to tell me you don't know what I'm talking about?" No reply. "Okay," Reacher said. "I'm going to assume you do know what I'm talking about." No comment. Reacher said, "I want to know how you knew the Duncans in the first place. Was it a matter of shared enthusiasms? We all members of the same disgusting little club?" The guy didn't answer. Reacher asked, "Had you done it before somewhere?" No reply. Reacher asked, "Or was it your first time?" No reply. Reacher said, "You need to talk to me. It's your only way of staying alive." The guy said nothing. He closed his eyes again, and his hands started creeping back under his body again, blindly, all twisted and awkward. He was up on one hip and one elbow, curled around, the bottom of his rib cage facing Reacher like the open mouth of a bucket. The muzzle of the rifle jerked left a little. The guy had his hand on the forestock. He didn't want to stay alive. He was going to commit suicide. Not with the rifle, but by moving the rifle. Reacher knew the signs. Suicide by cop, it was called. Not uncommon after arrests for certain kinds of crimes. Reacher said, "It had to come to an end sometime, right?" The guy nodded. Just a tiny movement of his head, almost not there at all. The rifle kept on moving, sudden inch after sudden inch, pulling and snagging, trapped between the wooden boards and the guy's awkward clothing. Reacher said, "Open your eyes, I want you to see it coming." The guy opened his eyes. Reacher let him fumble the rifle through 90 degrees, and then he shot him with the sawed-off in the gut. Another tremendous 12-gauge blast in the stillness, at an angle that drove the small steel buckshot balls upward through the guy's stomach and deep into his chest cavity. He died more or less instantly, which was a privilege Reacher figured had not been offered to young Margaret Coe. Reacher waited a long moment, and then he stepped up on the roof of the Silverado's cab and climbed onto the half-loft shelf and squatted next to the dead man. He rolled him off the rifle and climbed down with it. It was a fancy toy, custom-built around a standard Winchester bolt action. Very expensive, probably, but as good a way of wasting money as any other. There was a .338 Magnum in the breech and five more in the magazine. Reacher thought the .338 was overkill at 120 yards against a human target, but he figured the firepower was about to be useful. He carried the rifle to the mouth of the shelter and stepped over the tripwire again and stood with the cold sun on his face. Then he looped around and headed for the barn. The Judas hole was hinged to open outward and was secured with the kind of lock normally seen on a suburban front door. There was a corroded brass keyhole plate the diameter of an espresso cup, and there would be a steel tongue behind it, which would be snicked into a pressed steel receptacle, which would be rabbited into the jamb and held by two screws. The jamb was the main slider itself, which was a sturdy item. Reacher aimed the fancy rifle from a foot away and fired twice at where he thought the screws might be, and then twice more at a different angle. The Magnums did a pretty good job. The door sagged open half an inch before catching on splinters. Reacher jammed his fingertips in the crack and pulled hard. A jagged piece of wood the length of his arm split off and fell to the floor, and the door came free. Reacher folded the door all the way back, and then he stood in the sun for a second, and then he stepped inside the barn. Chapter 56. Reacher stepped out of the barn again 11 minutes later and saw Dorothy Coe's truck driving up the track toward him. There were three people in the cab. Dorothy herself was at the wheel, and the doctor was in the passenger seat, and the doctor's wife was jammed in the space between them. Reacher stood absolutely still, completely numb, blinking in the sun, the captured rifle in one hand, the other hand hanging free. Dorothy Coe slowed and stopped and waited 30 feet away, a cautious distance, as if she already knew. A long minute later, the truck doors opened and the doctor climbed out. His wife slid across the vinyl and joined him. Then Dorothy Coe got out on her side. She stood still, shielded by the open door, one hand on its frame. Reacher blinked one last time and ran his free hand over his taped face and walked down to meet her. She was quiet for a moment, and then she started the same question twice and stopped twice before getting it all the way out on the third attempt. She asked,
"Is she in there?"
Reacher said,
"Yes."
"Are you sure?"
"Her bike is in there."
"Still? After all these years? Are you sure it's hers?"
"It's as described in the police report."
"It must be all rusted."
"A little. It's dry in there."
Dorothy Coe went quiet. She was staring at the western horizon, a degree or two south of the barn, as if she couldn't look directly at it. She was completely still, but her hand was clenched hard on the truck's door frame. Her knuckles were white. She asked,
"Can you tell what happened to her?"
Reacher said,
"No,"
which was technically true. He was no pathologist. But he had been a cop for a long time, and he knew a thing or two, and he could guess. She said,
"I should go look."
He said,
"Don't."
"I have to."
"Not really.
I want